So, have you ever heard of or participated in one of those types of debates that kind of goes something like this? It's either Hellman's, or it's Miracle Whip, or it's Coke, or it's Pepsi, or it's ketchup, or it's no ketchup on your hot dog. I hope I know where you fall on that one, please. Well, the same type of debate occurs when we talk about superheroes, in case you aren't aware. There's Marvel, and there's DC Universe, right? There's Spider-Man, and there's Batman. You with me? Okay. So personally, I'm a huge fan of Batman, and so DC is an easy call for me. I mean, DC all day, every day, hands down, no question. Which is why the prospect of a Wonder Woman movie was so intriguing for me. And just to clarify, this is my DC mug. Wonder Woman is on it, alongside Batman, Superman, and others. But here's the thing. There was so much hype around this movie. Did you hear of the hype around this movie? There was so much hype that I was a little nervous and a little skeptical, like, is it going to be really that good? But after I got a few trusted endorsements, I thought, okay, maybe I'll go see it. So Keita and I, for the first time, went to the Catlow. That was awesome. And we saw it on our anniversary. And I'm going to be the first to admit to you that my skepticism was so not warranted. So I sat there almost the entire movie, just totally slack-jawed, right? Because I felt like I was witnessing this really significant cultural moment. And for those of you who might have any interest in seeing this movie, I would recommend it. I don't want to issue any spoilers, but let's just say that the movie was awesome. Like, really, really awesome. But here's the question. Do you know just how many years it took for Wonder Woman to make her silver screen debut? Does anybody have a guess? Anybody know? Roughly 40 years. So it took 40-ish years for Wonder Woman to finally have a name in Hollywood. And in my opinion, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I think that's just too long. Which is why our children's book for this week was equally intriguing to me. And my guess is most of you have never heard of this book. Lord knows I hadn't until Keita read it to me and said, this was my favorite childhood story. I thought, okay. So it's a longer one. It's a little bit dense. So I'm going to try and keep the synopsis short in the interest of time. It's the story of a young girl named Cosima and her pet camel, Amazing Maisie. A camel with unbendable knees that nobody wanted. Well, Cosima gave her a chance. She buys a camel. And they get into all kinds of mischief together. They take rides through the desert. And they even manage to evade the wicked Walla Wellibhut's cold porridge brigade. They're a nasty bunch. And ultimately, they beat Mr. Wicked, Walla Wellibhut, at his own game, and they win the coveted Christmas Camel Race Cup. But during the story, what they discover about Amazing Maisie is that she is terrified of cold porridge. And when she encounters cold porridge, it makes her knees kind of weak and wobbly, and she gets all kind of freaked out, and it makes her knees bend, so that she can fall to the ground and finally sleep, lying down. So basically, in a nutshell, this is a story of two misfits, two kindred misfits, and their triumph over the status quo. But I want you to notice something in this title. The title is Amazing Maisie and the Cold Porridge Brigade. Cosima, one of the protagonists, is not mentioned in this title. In other words, she is not given a name. Now, I'll be the first to admit that Cosima is a troublemaker, no doubt. Repeatedly throughout the story, her parents would say to her over and over again, "Oh, Cosima, how could you be so..." But before they could say naughty, Cosima would somehow reply, whether it was verbally or she would run out of the house and get into more trouble or she'd do something else altogether. You see, even when her intentions were good, Cosima had a real knack for messing things up. So throughout the story, she's essentially told that she's a screw-up, but she's also told that the very desires of her heart are wrong. You see, Cosima wanted nothing more than a camel, and when she goes to purchase Amazing Maisie for a mere 25 cents, the vendor calls her sir and tells her that girls don't ride camels, and they certainly don't buy them. So in this book, time and time again, we see Cosima pigeonholed, boxed into these gender stereotypes, stifling her sense of individuality and leaving her nameless. And this is not only a problem in this book, but it's also a problem that we can see in the Bible too. And so I think it's a topic worthy of our attention this morning. So let's start out with that Judges text, for example. And yes, I chose Judges of my own volition. I don't know what I was thinking. So we've got Jephthah. And he, if you've read Hebrews 11, you know that he's heralded in this hall of heroes. He's this hero. He's triumphed in battle. But he knowingly sacrifices his daughter in exchange for that battle victory. Meanwhile, his daughter, doesn't even have a name in the text. No, she's the one who willingly goes on to glory for the sake of her father and his honor, but gets zero recognition. Meanwhile, Jephthah, he gets all the acclaim, all the accord. Now you tell me who the hero is in this story. Is it really Jephthah? Or is it this unnamed daughter who's so naughty that she innocently runs to the front door when she hears her father approaching, and she's excited and she greets him with love and compassion and dancing, only to find out that she's going to be sacrificed? And folks, let me just be clear about something. If you've read the text closely, you might think there's some debate. There's some debate there, and I'll acknowledge that. There's some debate that maybe Jephthah didn't think his daughter was going to come to the front door, that maybe she wasn't going to be the one. But I assure you, read the original text in its original language, and there was no doubt that he knew exactly who was going to meet him at that door. So you see, women aren't known to get a lot of credit in the Bible. And yet if we read these stories time and time again, we see evidence of their heroism. They don't get the fancy titles, and they don't even get names, but yet they persist, and they contribute to the Bible in really critical ways. And we see it in the Matthew text too. In the Synoptic Gospels, so that's Matthew, Mark, and Luke, just to be clear, in the story of the naughty woman who breaks this really expensive jar of alabaster ointment over Jesus' head, she too doesn't have a name. And while the disciples chastise her for such behavior, Jesus turns to them and chastises them for their ignorance. God bless Jesus. Do you see the pattern here of nameless women? Of women who, quote-unquote, behave badly, when in actuality, much like Glee said earlier, their actions are a product and a belief and a faith and a fidelity and a love to God. But yet they remain nameless. Now, folks, if this sounds a little bit like a feminist sermon, it's because it is. Because I think it's important to recognize these silent female characters. These women, who I believe deserve to be called by name. much like I believe Cosima deserved her name in the title, much like I thought Wonder Woman should have been on the screen a long time ago. Now, for the sake of not being exclusionary, gentlemen, this is not a critique of you, nor is it any sort of indictment. I just want to be clear about that. Because I know that there are many fine and strong women in this congregation. I'm looking at a lot of you right now. I'm looking you in the eyes. Some of you are wives, some are mothers, some are daughters, and some are friends. And you, gentlemen, are the ones who shower them with love and support. You see, you're the ones who encourage and empower them. And speaking as a woman myself, I'm going to say, we need you. We need men like you who are willing to recognize us and to call us by name, even when the rest of the world might not. Because for every Rosa Parks that we've heard about in history, there's an Ella Baker. For every Anne Frank, there's a Hannah Sinesh. For every Amelia Earhart, there's a Bessie Coleman. Just like those unsung wonder women of the Bible, these latter women captured little of the public's imagination. However, nonetheless exhibited the same courage, the same selflessness, and the same love in their efforts to truly change and transform the world. You see, these were the ones in history without names. The ones that history all let slip through its fingers, let slip through its cracks, when they are so deserving of very much more. And you know what? They were naughty. And you know what? They were rabble-rousers. And yet, these are the women who paved the way for us who are sitting here today enjoying freedoms as such as the right to vote, the right to protect our country, and the right to even sit in the front of a bus. So today, as women continue to fight for their names, fight for their recognition, we can be inspired by the actions of those unnamed women here and in the Bible who stood up to convention in the name of God. They are subversive, they are countercultural, and their names matter. Now let me ask you, have you ever been told that you couldn't do something? Have you ever been told that you're not good enough? You're not smart enough? You're not talented enough? Have you ever been told that you never amount to anything? I have. Has anyone ever tried to take your name or your identity or your sense of self-worth away from you? Have they tried? If so, then you know how painful that is. But here's the good news, is that we all know what our worth is in the eyes of God. You see, in God's kingdom, we all have names that are irreplaceable, and they are as precious to God as gold. And no one, I say no one, can take those names from us, because they're given by God. And that is why I believe today it is our duty, it is our responsibility as Christians to call one another by name. We've got to inspire and uplift one another and call one another by name in the name of God who calls upon us. We've got to challenge conventions. We've got to continue to break down walls. We've got to encourage one another in our pursuit to realize our God-given potential and to claim our names as our own. And to do that, I think we might just have to be a little naughty. I think that we might have to have just a little bit of courage. After all, didn't Jesus dig it when that unnamed woman busted that jar of ointment over his head? He was like, great! She broke conventions of her time. You see, I think we've got to be willing to step out as Christians and to stand out as the body of Christ. And what does that mean? Well, that means that everyone gets included in the fold and every single human being gets called by name. Now I want to wrap this up this morning by acknowledging the climate of our world and of perhaps politics. I know how divisive it can feel. I know that I've been challenged myself to remember people's names in a time where it's easier to see others who disagree with me as nameless, as faceless, and as other. But the truth is that they're not that. The truth is that they're children of God, just like you and me. And truth be told, they deserve their names too. So what I guess I'm hoping for in all of this is that we just keep working to see one another, to hold one another up, and to call one another by name. We shouldn't let God's children go nameless. We don't know what they're going through. We don't know where they've been. We don't know what troubles them. And likewise, they don't know where we've been either. Cosima has a name. Wonder Woman has a name. Maybe you've heard this. Shakespeare once wrote, "What's in a name?" Well, I think a lot, actually. Just ask those unnamed women in the Bible what they think about their names. Amen.